Hey, I'm Heather, a chaos coordinator and mom of three young kids. Chaos and cookies is literally my life, with never-ending dishes, laundry, you name it. Being a mom is a blessing, but it also comes with hard days too. Together, we can find the humor and real solutions to lighten your load and clean up the crumbs. You're listening to the Chaos and Cookies Podcast. Welcome back to another episode of the Chaos and Cookies Podcast. I have a National Geographic author with me today. I'm super excited. His name is Joe Yogerst. And during more than three decades as an editor, writer, photographer, and speaker, Joe has lived and worked in Asia, Africa, Europe, and North America. His writing has appeared in Condé Nast Traveler, CNN Travel, Islands Magazine, the International New York Times in Paris, Washington Post, Los Angeles Times, Forbes Travel, and National Geographic Digital. He has also worked on over 40 National Geographic books, including the best-selling 50 States, 5,000 Ideas. We are talking about the book 50 States, 1,000 Eats, Where to Go, When to Go, What to Eat, What to Drink. Today, and you will find diverse recommendations in all 50 states and 11 Canadian provinces and territories, including can't miss restaurants as seen on TV, food trucks, diners and cafes, and delicious regional delicacies. Plus, each entry offers fascinating food history along with expert travel tips for where to stay and things to see. While on the foodie trail, Joe is a California native and now lives in San Diego. Welcome, Joe, to the podcast. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me this morning.
Absolutely. And you're in sunny San Diego?
Well, it's not too sunny today. It looks cloudy and like it might rain, but we're having another rainy winter here and we can use the water, but it's not the epitome of sunny Southern California beach weather today.
Yeah, that's on my list. I've been to California and it's not San Diego, so I'm toying with the idea of going out there soon. So it's intriguing as I hear that's like the perfect weather. It's like always 70. Like
that's what people think, but that's not necessarily the case. And they're always disappointed. I tell people, you know, San Francisco is famous for its summer fog and we get the same down here. It's not as heavy, but, you know, if you live near the coast like I do, we have the marine layer, which is, and this is, it's called, you know, May gray, June gloom.
Oh,
you know, we have names for it. It's a different season for us. If you want really good beach weather, come in the fall, September, October, best beach weather.
Good to know. Okay. Well, I'll make a note of that. Watch out for the
great whites. So
yes. There's one actually, being tracked around here in the Gulf in Texas right now.
Oh, really? Okay.
Her name is Leanne or Lehigh. She's huge. She's been.
They have become avid travelers.
Yeah, this is the furthest one far west as one's gone. I think they've.
Wow. Okay.
It's just for time for spring break when everyone was going to the coast. So, yeah. Well, definitely. And then the seals and stuff the sea lions out there are really nice too, huh?
Yep. Lots of those.
Oh yeah. Well, I'm gonna we're talking about your book, 50 States, 1,000 Eats. It's National Geographic. We love National Geographic here on the podcast. Before we jump in, I ask all of my guests this question, and it's very fitting for this book: is what is your favorite cookie and or cookie memory?
Wow. Jeez. Am I allowed to say I'm not a cookie person?
Oh, I've gotten that too. I've gotten that too.
My wife is a huge cookie person, and my kids are, and I never really have been a cookie person. So I don't think that I have a favorite.
Really.
Maybe that's a strange thing to say, but
that's the first time I've ever had that. Yes.
If there's a plate of cookies around, I kind of feel the same way about chocolate, believe it or not.
Now what about peanut butter? Are you human?
Peanut butter out of the jar. Yeah,
okay.
For sure.
Okay. We can still be friends. Like you can't
The one thing I can't pass on is ice cream.
Yeah, I'm a big ice cream fan.
I cannot pass on ice cream.
What's your favorite flavor of ice cream then, I'll ask?
Pistachio.
Oh, that's my dad's favorite. And will you eat a, this is gonna be a random question. Will you eat a pistachio, or maybe it's the mint chocolate he won't do if it's, yeah, if it's green.
It should be green.
So
I know that
pistachio
it's
sun.
officially, I know it's officially white, but
Correct, because it's got
I'll eat
artificial.
it either way. I'll eat it in the original whitish cream colored form, or I'll do it green. Because I grew up with it green from the supermarket, that's what I think of. But the real gourmet original pistachio is definitely whitish, creamish colored. So,
Yeah, my dad's
but
particular
cookies,
that way.
Girl Scout cookies, love those. If I had to pick one that I really would go for, mint chocolate chip.
Which is also, yeah, you have like my dad's taste buds, but he will only do the white kind. He won't do the green, I guess. I don't know. That's a kind of a weird thing, but I don't know. My favorite flavor of ice cream, it grosses a lot of people out, is coffee.
That's okay. I like coffee and different variations on coffee, cappuccino and things.
Bluebell, that's the best.
I like, you're from Texas, so I like tropical fruit ice creams like mango sherbet, sorbet. I love sorbet.
Healthier choices.
Basically, any kind of ice cream, I'm game for.
I can't pass up. If it's on the menu, I'm like gelato
Yeah.
or any rendition, like I just can't.
Vanilla, I'm really a fan of. A lot of people don't like vanilla because they consider it boring, but if you get really rich, artisanal vanilla, the flavor is amazing.
Yeah, with the vanilla bean and stuff. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
So it's safe to say we're probably not going to find your favorite cookie stop in this book.
No.
Maybe you should add one on your next card.
My favorite cookie stop is the Girl Scout selling in front of the local supermarket. That's my
Absolutely.
favorite cookie stop.
Absolutely. I have a box in my fridge right now. I was a Girl Scout myself. We used to, man, they have to buy them and now sell them. Back when I was a Girl Scout, we had the pace of, poster board, and we would go and knock on doors, and hopefully we got there before our neighbor did. And you'd write down how many, and then you'd come
Yeah.
and collect the money, and then you'd order them and bring them back and deliver them. It was awful.
That's what my girls did. And there was always the kid with the parent that had the red wagon
Yes.
taking them from door to door. And then there was always the kid who always won the contest, whose parents took it to work and sold them to all their workmates. And
Remember
you
that.
just can't. And because I always worked at home, I never had an office I could do that at. So.
Right. I remember my mom would bring it to her school, and then we would bring it to soccer practice. But then, like, I just remember then we'd come home and look at all the orders and be like, wow, someone bought four boxes. We were like, woo. It was the
Yeah.
best thing ever. Now they buy them and have to, like, four things, have to sell them. Like, but I've locally, they've been doing it at the movie theater, in the theater. Super genius.
Oh,
Instead of going
really?
to the
Wow.
concession stand, you go and get a box of
Yeah.
cookies.
Okay. All right.
I
Why
think it's
not?
pretty genius. It's the one
They
that
could
you
do
can
that
dine
at
in.
sporting events too. They should do that at Major League Baseball games and things, and
Oh yeah, they were definitely onto
yeah.
something. I was like, this is smart. Like,
Yeah.
I'd rather have, Girl Scout cookies and some Raisinets, in my opinion. So this book is, I got very excited when I got the book. My son, I always say when I get these books, it's not the typical yellow, so he didn't know, but he'll always steal the yellow National Geographic books I get, because I do a lot of the National Nat Geo kids. But
Yeah.
this is super fun, because if you're a foodie, which have you always been interested in food? Has that been like an interest of
I've
yours?
always been interested in eating, let's put it that way.
Okay.
I'm not a restaurant reviewer and I'm not a food writer. I'm a travel writer. I travel a lot. I have my whole life, and you have to eat as you travel. And I'm always looking for interesting places to eat. And this is the seventh in the series of these books, starting with the original 50 States, which was 20, 2018, I think it came out, 2017, 2018. And so this book is really an accumulation of a lifetime of eating and also the trips I've taken for seven of these books now. And I had a year to do this one, and I took some trips specifically for this book. But a lot of the restaurants and the recommendations and the foods came from the other books that I didn't really get to talk about food that much in the other books, and but I was always taking notes and collecting information. And it's, family and friends gave me recommendations. I couldn't eat at 1,000 places in a year. There was just no way. And I couldn't travel to all 50 states and across Canada in a year and eat everywhere. So it's really a team effort. The National Geographic editors and the team there, they're all in Washington, D.C., or they live in Northern Virginia or Maryland, but they're from all over the country. And they had favorite places from their college towns or their hometowns. And, I would hit up my friends all over the place, Maine and New York City and Chicago and wherever. And, it's like, well, where do you guys like to eat? If you had a special date night, where would you go? Is there a little local place that's, one of your favorites that's kind of under the radar? So the recommendations really came from a lot of different sources, plus my own road trips of trying to find interesting places to eat.
That's what I was going to ask. Like, I know you probably fly to the main. Did you road trip most of these, or did you fly and then kind of drive around the like areas?
If it's in the Western United States, I road trip. The longest road trip that I've taken for this book was really to West Texas and back through Arizona and New Mexico, excuse me, and then to Utah and back. The other places I would have flown, even Oregon, Washington State, Montana, I flew to. Some of the ones I did specifically for food were Indiana, Illinois, North Carolina. Both of my kids went to college in Boston, and so I had eight years of visiting Boston. And every time we did, my wife and I would take off and go to a different part of New England, New Hampshire, Maine, Cape Cod, wherever it was, Vermont. And, you always want to eat well. And, Vermont's great for ice cream, of course, because of Ben and Jerry's.
Yeah. And actually the, in Erie, not Erie, Penn State Creamery, they, I believe, trained under Ben and Jerry, or Ben and Jerry trained
okay,
under
there's,
Ben.
Yeah. There's a couple of college creameries around the country that have really amazing that you can go to. They have retail outlets and at the Aggie schools and, where the students work, and they make great ice cream and they sell their milk and things and yogurt and cheese and whatever. But that's what it was all about. It was a lot of work over a lot of years, a lot of good food. If it was bad food, it didn't make the book.
No, so. Can't do that. You don't want to do that. The National Geographic's known also for like their visuals. So did you have to give them a list of things? And then I know they have, I've talked to lots of editors and stuff with National Geographic. So they have a database.
We did, before I even started writing this book, I had to do an outline, which is basically a short list. What was for the photo research? What are you going to feature? What foods and what restaurants and what bars are you going to feature? So they can start doing the photo research long before I even start turning in the chapters. And it turned out to be a very long short list. It was like 40 pages. Because I don't know if I had 1,000 places on it, but it was a long short list. And so that's how we started it with that. And then as I put together that list, talking to a lot of different people, and I didn't really go on the web and see if these places were still around. But when I started writing the chapters, I realized that, I don't know, 5 to 10% of them didn't survive COVID.
I was going to say, is this pre-COVID? Because a lot of restaurants, especially.
No, we started after COVID, but like I said, a lot of people just didn't take their websites down. They went out of business, website was still up. So you'd have to go, when I started writing the book, I'd have to go and see, I would call them, are you guys still open? If they didn't have an active, like Facebook or Instagram with something posted this week, I thought something's not right. And I would call them. And if they didn't answer the phone or the phone was disconnected, I would then go on Yelp or TripAdvisor to see when the last reviews were posted. And you could pretty much tell when a place shut down. And it's
Right.
amazing how many, especially in the Midwest and South, not so much the Northeast and the West, but a lot of smaller independent restaurants just didn't make it through the pandemic.
We had a large one here, a very well-known one, that didn't make it either. And when it shut down, we were like, wow. And it was on Barton Creek area. And it had been around forever. And I don't know if they were just retiring or if it just wasn't doing what it was after COVID, but it's a shame to see like your favorite restaurant like just disappear.
I met a couple in well, talked to a couple in, I think it was Kansas or Nebraska, that had a restaurant that I was interested in, and it didn't look like they were open anymore, but they still answered the phone, and they said, "We're retired now, COVID, we just decided to, we were going to wait a couple more years, but business was so bad, we just decided to retire early, in 2020, 2021."
Wow.
So yeah, it was bad for restaurants. The good thing about it was that so many people got sidewalk dining out of it,
Yep. I was going to say a lot of
which
to
is,
go too. That's booming
yeah,
now.
to go and sidewalk dining just kind of revolutionized a lot of restaurant places. Here in San Diego, and we have what's called the Gaslamp District, which was the old kind of Wild West town where Wyatt Earp once had saloons and gambling halls and things. And it was, when I was growing up here, it was kind of Skid Row. It was, you didn't go down there because it was just kind of the rough side of town. And then they totally, like many cities, they pumped money into it and revitalized it. And the restaurants were all scattered along the main streets there, but they're downtown urban streets, and they didn't have a lot of outdoor dining. COVID, they shut down the main street, and it's still shut down on at nighttime for outdoor dining. They've just kept it alive, which I thought was great. And they did the same thing in our Little Italy section here, which was on a busy main street. And they don't shut down that street anymore, but they let them keep the sidewalk dining in place.
Right, right.
So that was one good thing that came out of COVID, I thought, was this, the whole going outdoor al fresco type dining trend that a lot of, some cities have got rid of it, and other cities said, it was a great idea, people like it, let's keep it.
Yeah, lots of here in Austin, there's a lot of food trucks that pop up a lot because there's a lot of breweries and it's hill country, so people like to get outside and it's very dog friendly, kid friendly city, so they have to really cater to those outdoorsy type, and it's hot here, so it's like trying to find a good place that you can kind of go both because it gets like we are in triple digits for a long time here this last summer.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and so finding food that you're going to be able to eat outside and not feel like really, I mean, it's already hot, but something that'll make it fun because food is an experience, right? So travel is an
Sure.
experience. I mean, you mentioned Cape Cod. I used to summer, like go up to the summer. My parents are from New York, so they're very like always trying to find the best pizza. They finally, I think, found one here because they moved here a couple of years ago
There
from
is no
Houston.
best pizza. There is no best pizza.
No, because everyone's different, right?
Yes.
I think the worst pizza is cauliflower. Sorry, I've not had a very good like gluten-free pizza. I just have not gotten that one right. But maybe it's in the book. I mean, you have a multiple. You've got alcohol in here. I mean, I think it's by state that this is categorized in, which is super awesome. Did you ever, I'm just looking, did you stick with like the stereotypical foods that come with that state, or did you try and highlight some things that maybe that state did not, were not known for?
Well, sometimes, a lot of times, the stereotypical foods are not the foods that people from outside of that state think of being stereotypical.
I'm thinking like
There's a lot of,
barbecue, steak,
yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah, those are the typical ones, but you still have regional dishes that are maybe not so well known. One of the great examples is the Upper Peninsula in Michigan, the UP. And I call it Youper cuisine because the people call themselves Youpers,
Okay.
UP Youpers. And it was populated in the late 1800s by immigrants from Cornwall in England and from Finland. And the Cornish people were there because they were miners. They went from tin mining in Cornwall to copper mining in Michigan. They were recruited to come over to do that. And the Finns apparently just liked the fact that it reminded them of Finland, the lakes and the forest and everything. And they had a huge, and they were also Italian immigrants that went and worked in the mines. So you have these very particular Italian, Finnish, and Cornish dishes that exist in the Upper Peninsula that are still very much the regional food there. You have Swedish pancakes with berry sauce for breakfast. You have Italian
Cranberry.
sausage sandwiches. Yeah, Italian sausage sandwiches, and Cornish pasties, which are these kind of turnovers that are stuffed with meat or vegetables. So you have three very distinctive, iconic ethnic dishes that people ne don't necessarily think of as being from Michigan unless they're from Michigan, right? I mean, I don't know what people think of as being from Michigan other than cherries, maybe, but so you find these things that are typical of the area, but people from outside the area don't think of them as being typical because they don't know them. And I think you have those all over the place. Arizona, one of my favorite, maybe my favorite food, this shows how low rent my taste buds are, Sonora hot dogs.
Hey,
So,
everyone loves a good hot dog.
which are from Sonora State in Mexico. They started, they were American hot dogs that went across the border, got fancied up with various ingredients in Mexico, went back across the border into Tucson and southern Arizona, and there are Sonoran hot dogs that you can get at food trucks. Food trucks are the best place in Tucson, and a couple of small restaurants that specialize in it, but that's made its way to Phoenix now. So it's slowly making its way north from the border again. So it's an interesting thing of how food culture, it's cultural appropriation. Food culture is all about cultural appropriation.
Oh, yeah.
Sonora, Mexico took our hot dog and made it their own, and then we took their hot dog, and now it's one of the specialties of southern Arizona. And there's so many, that's one of the things that fascinates me about food is kind of the origin stories for a lot of dishes. The fact that spaghetti and meatballs is not from Italy, it's from New York City. Italian immigrants in New York City invented, they didn't invent the spaghetti, but they invented the spaghetti with the meatballs. So,
Right. And the margarita pizza was from for margarita. That's the Italian flag, which is why it's green, red, and wine. Right.
yes.
And when you're talking about regional food, it just came to mind. Like I lived in Tampa for 11 years. I went to school out there and
Yeah.
came back to Texas. But Tarpon Springs was is a small town outside of
Greek,
Tampa,
yeah, Greek food,
huge
yeah.
Greek. And it's a
It
it's like
is,
little
yes.
Greece, and it's on the Sponge Docks, and you get the best Greek food there, and I would not need it
Yeah.
anywhere else.
Yeah, right down on the waterfront, those little restaurants that are right on the harbor there, opposite where the boats come in, and Cuban food in Tampa.
Yes, so
People
good.
think of Miami as being Cuban food, but Tampa's got
I
great
would go
Cuban
to
food.
Miami for Argentinian. There was a really great Venezuelan and Argentinian place there, but in Tampa, they have the Cuban little. Ybor City is all Cuban
Yeah.
cigars and little Cuba. You get the best Cuban sandwiches, and then you get the little Coronitas, the really sweet coffees, and you would just get the best Cuban sandwich. And they
Yeah.
all sold them. All the coffee shops sold them, and that's you could always get a really good one. So yeah, that was a really great
Yeah.
staple too. So I guess that makes sense.
And it yeah, again, growing up in San Diego, I grew up with and a mother from Phoenix. I grew up with Mexican food, so I was really a snob about it until a couple of years ago. I figured no one can do Mexican food who's not within 20 miles of the border. Well, that's not true. Maybe 100
That
miles of the
Tex-Mex
border.
though, almost like they call it Tex-Mex here. It's not really truly Mexican food here in Texas. It's Tex-Mex when you
No,
get traditional.
but it has roots in, the food that came from Spain and Mexico and independent Texas and then the state, it's all blended together to make Tex-Mex. California Mexican cuisine is not like anything they serve in Mexico. It's California Mex, fish tacos, they kind of came from Baja, but not like they serve here. And New Mexico Mexican cuisine is totally different again. But that's 400 years of a culinary culture in New Mexico that started when the Spanish first arrived, and it's blended with Native American ingredients. So the Mexican cuisine, well, what we think of, varies a lot from state to state. And good Mexican restaurants have started popping up all over. I mean, there's some really bad ones that are not within 100 miles of the border, but there's a great one in Hartford, Connecticut that I found, a great Mexican restaurant in Hartford that you'd never think of. Camacho's Garage, which is in an old auto repair shop location, and it's now this cute little hip little Mexican restaurant in Hartford, with good food.
Is there any restaurants that you came across where you probably passed it a ton of times looking for it because it was so hole in the wall, and then you finally were like, oh, here it is? Or did you just like after an hour, you're like, I can't, we're just gonna move on?
There was a place in Edmonton, Canada, like that was in an old Victorian home, and the GPS couldn't find it, and I kept going there, and it didn't have a sign. The sign was about literally about this big,
So
like
small.
car license plate size, and the neighborhood was full of old Victorian homes. And I kept going around and around, and I probably passed it 10 times before I just parked and started walking up and down the street, and I finally saw the little sign. And it was a restaurant that specialized in vegan food, which I normally wouldn't be fond of, but they just did an incredible vegan tasting menu that I just thought was I was with my wife on that trip, and we just thought it was out of this world. And so, yeah, that was one place that I just couldn't find the place.
Did you write about that in this book? And did you give tips on how to find
And of course I can't think of the name of it now, but I'm looking at the chapter and trying to find the name. Where is it?
it? Because it's because if you have the pointers on how to get there, it's you know, because then if you had a hard time finding it, you want to make sure that people can go and enjoy it as
Yes, and
well.
of course now I can't find it. Why is that?
Which province was it?
In Alberta.
Oh, Alberta's right here. Alberta's on 268. So
Yeah, I have the original Word document in front of me on the screen.
okay, was
That
it
might be mixed up with something else. That's not
east
Toronto.
of
It's not, or maybe it was
Edmonton,
Quebec
Saskatchewan?
City. You know, that's the problem when you write about so many places, they start to blend into one another.
But it's in Canada.
Actually, I lie. I think maybe it was in Ontario, in Ottawa. Now I can find it.
I love how it's
Where?
so easy to maneuver the book with just, it's just very well organized and well laid
Thank
out.
you. If
Yeah, so.
I only had a photographic memory and I could remember everything right away.
Yeah, no, it's hard.
Oh, here it is. Yes, it's called Alice. The
Alice.
chef and owner is Alice. Yes, it's in Ottawa.
Okay.
Fermentation focused dishes, pumpkin
Oh.
seed tempura, Japanese maitake and kelp, forest and mountain landscape dessert with juniper berries, dark chocolate and ice cream. Everything is there are no carnivorous dishes, there are no meat dishes. It's all vegan made and very artistically presented. They're like
Oh.
little artworks on your plate. And so that's Alice in Ottawa.
Okay. Awesome. Do you
Don't ask
like
me how to
that
get
kind
there,
of
though.
food?
Don't ask me
Maybe.
how to get there, though.
Don't ask me how to get there, but it's a tiny little sign. Maybe if they listen, they can maybe make a bigger sign, or maybe they just like to be found, like for people that just know about them, right?
It was full. You have to make reservations. They only have like 10 tables. They have a set menu every night. There's no a la carte. You have to eat whatever they're fixing that night. But
Okay.
it was an amazing place. So.
There's one like that here. It's not the Odd Duck, but it's all tasting menu. So you just do it's and it's not the cheapest place. And I can't remember. I just went a few months ago. And I found out that it was one of my kids' friends from preschool's dad that owns it. I was like, What? And so his dad, the little, well, he's 10 now, but the 10-year-old's grandfather is Jack Allen. Jack Allen has a chain of restaurants here called Jack Allen's Kitchen. And so I guess they, their son owns this restaurant. It's escaping me at the moment, but it's all tasting menu. It's one bite and it's, an experience. So I'm sure you have those
Yeah.
mixed in.
Oh yeah. Tasting menus. Some amazing ones. A Japanese place in Boston has this amazing tasting menu. With about 20 different small Japanese dishes. It's called Oya, and it's a omakase, 20-course omakase tasting menu. And again, they're kind of little pieces, almost like little artwork pieces. They're tiny bites. If you're going to have 20 dishes, they better be small. But each one is very artistically presented. There's another one, Campton Place restaurant at the Taj Campton Place Hotel in San Francisco, has an amazing Indian flavor tasting menu. So there's a lot of them around. They tend to be a little expensive. They can run one, two, $300 actually, but if you're a real foodie, and you haven't eaten in a couple of days, they're really worthwhile to
I joke there's a restaurant called Uchi here. It's a tasting menu. It's fantastic. James Beard Award winner and everything. But I joke, like, go to Chick-fil-A after because you're gonna A, spend a ton of money, and B, it's like you're not you're just enough, but you're gonna be hungry in like an hour because everything's like deconstructed. It's very foody, right? And Austin's got a huge like food culture here. And you had mentioned that you have like favorites. So do you? I have two questions. One, before I jump into the favorite breakfast, lunch, and dinner, which is hard probably because you have so much. Because I have to ask because you said that before. But do you get like a stipend to do these types of things? Obviously, from National Geographic.
Not anymore.
No. So it's kind of like labor of love.
I shouldn't give away their the company secrets.
Well, if you're writing a book for them, do they help?
Let's put it this way, they pay me well.
Yeah, I understand. Got it.
They pay me very well for these books. In the very beginning, when I first started, the first book I did for them, just on me alone, was driving the Pan American Highway from Laredo, Texas, to Argentina. And
Oh.
that was a year-long assignment that I did in five parts. I actually started in Monterrey, Mexico, rented a car, drove back to the border, crossed the bridge on foot so I could start on the Texas side. Turned around, walked back across the border,
Oh
and
my
that was
God.
the beginning of driving the Pan American Highway.
Wow.
I got a lot. Basically, they covered all of my expenses for that trip, everything, the gas, the food, the hotels. But I didn't get nearly as much money for writing it. Now I get a lot more money for writing and no expenses. So it does come out of my own pocket when I have to pay. But like I said, they reward me handsomely, and they keep giving me more money even though I don't ask for it, which is very rare.
Hey, why not? Hey, that's a good problem to have, I think. They value you as
Yeah.
a writer because you have so much knowledge and so much experience. And when I read your bio, I was like, wow, you've just done so much. And so you mentioned you had a favorite breakfast here in Texas, or was it Austin?
No, it was in Marfa.
Marfa.
Yes, way
Okay.
out west. A place called the Water Stop in Marfa. I had done a canoe kayaking, kay, sorry, a canoe camping trip on the Rio Grande in Big Bend National Park with my youngest daughter. And we had been eating campfire food for a couple of days. And we were going to drive back to California, but we left early in the morning and it was still dark, and we got to Marfa just at sunrise. And we found this place on Highway 90, which is what you have to take to go up towards the interstate in El Paso, right on the outskirts of town. We stopped for breakfast, and it was just a, you watch the sun come up over, the Chihuahuan Desert, and they had Tex-Mex style scrambled eggs and gravy and biscuits. And it was just sitting out on the patio outside. It was a nice cool morning, and it was just a nice place to have it. Good food, good company to share it with one of my kids. And that's the kind of thing I think of as the best breakfast that came out of this book.
That's awesome. Yeah, because memories, the experience and the people that you're with, because food is a community thing, right? It's why the kitchen
Yeah,
and your house
sure.
is always so it always elevates a meal, right?
Yeah. And Marfa's kind of got this artsy, thing going on anyway. So I'm sure that this place exists because they have artsy patrons that like to go to this place.
Right.
But again, we're just kind of driving past it, and it's a little hole in the wall place, and we think, okay, there's nothing else beyond here for another hour or two, except just a hot two-lane highway. So we better stop now, or we're not going to eat for a while. But it was a great meal. So
Yeah, I used to road trip from Houston to Tampa 4 times because I'd drive my car out. My dad and I would go, and then he'd fly home, and then he'd fly back, and then we'd drive back for Christmas. And we'd have our little stops on the way from Texas
yeah.
to Tampa. And it's just, it this we have those memories. Like the food was okay, but we had the memories of that. So I think that's awesome, and that you got to experience that with this book. It's a fantastic guide. Can you tell us where we can find it, and if there's anything on the horizon for you that you're working on now?
The easiest place is Amazon Books or Barnes and Noble, their website. National Geographic Books, you can go on their website, but I think it's just harder, a little harder to navigate. It isn't, their book site is not as obvious as, I really should tell them this, their book site is not as easy to navigate as Barnes and Noble or Amazon.
Okay.
I always like to plug local independent bookstores.
Yes.
Go there, keep them alive, keep them going. They deserve to have a life.
I'll shout out to Blue Bunny Books out in Massachusetts. We have them on constantly for the children's books they write. I love Peter and Paul, and they got a little bookstore up there. So definitely
What
go.
am I working on now? I just got a new assignment that I haven't even started writing yet, and I haven't even turned in the outline yet, called The Traveler's Atlas of the World for National Geographic. And I will be writing the chapters on 14 different countries for that.
Ooh.
And I just did the first trip for that to Bolivia. We're
Ooh.
writing about Bolivia and 13 other places. And then I have to have that finished by the end of the summer. But that's a team book, right? There's, I don't know how many, 100 plus chapters, and I'm doing 14.
Okay.
But some really strange places that I'll go to visit this summer, like Kazakhstan and Uzbekistan. Not your usual places.
Yeah. But hey, there's people that live there, and there's people that have family and go there. So hey, it's always helpful.
Yes. And then the long-term project, which I have to have finished by this time next year, is a family adventure travel book, which will be 50 states. I don't know. We play around with the names forever. 50 states, 1,000 family adventures, or something like that. That will be out in March of 2026.
Oh wow, we'll have to definitely get that back on. I have a thousand perfect weekends. I have that National Geographic one.
Yes, I wrote a lot. I wrote about 20 of the 1,000 perfect weekends,
Oh,
or
you
something like
did. I have
that. Maybe
that
more than
book.
20.
Well,
Yes.
please come back. This was really lovely to have you, and thank you so much for taking the time to talk about your
Yeah,
experiences.
thanks for having me. I enjoyed it. Different kind of interview. I like that. So
Oh, good. I'm glad. I told you it'd be fun.
it was.
Try to keep it crazy and new. And then all the links will be in the show notes for everyone to grab your book. And I really appreciate you being here. Thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot. Have a good one.
Yeah, absolutely. And anyone listening to the Chaos and Cookies podcast, please join us next time and check out the 50 States, 1,000 Eats. And details are in the show notes.
Thank you for listening to the Chaos and Cookies podcast. If you want more goodies and friends to share them with, follow the crumbs to the Facebook group or visit the Chaos and Cookies website to grab my sweet secrets on how to calm your cookies. Don't forget to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. See y'all next week for another episode of Chaos and Cookies.